Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Halade et al. Titled Heart Functional and Structural Compendium of Cardiosplenic and Cardiorenal Networks in Acute and Chronic Heart Failure Pathology. This article was published November 3, 2017. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, Lead author Ganesh Halade, and content expert Zam Kasiri. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The Halade Laboratory examined the left ventricles, spleens, and kidneys of C57BL6J mice at time zero and at 1, 5, 28, and 56 days after myocardial infarction. The goal of this study was to develop a compendium of pathological changes across these three organs. Ganesh, tell us, what made you do this evaluation? And in particular, what made you look at the spleen and the kidney?
Great question, Mary. To go forward in speed, sometimes we need to take some steps backward. Likewise, here we are trying to understand what the source of innate immune responsive leukocytes is after heart attack. That source is the spleen. Then sustained cardiac injury leads feed-forward damage to the kidney, which is prevalent in a clinical setting. Therefore, we have selected to study time-dependent myocardial damage nexus to cardiosplenic and cardiorenal networks in heart failure pathology.
I love that concept, Ganesh, of going back and thinking about what's really clinically relevant within my patients and then taking that information forward back into your animal models to explore, again, how the animal models can be used to give us clinical insight. Zam, I want to ask you, this study demonstrates that MI triggers irreversible dysregulation in both the cardiosplenic and the cardiorenal networks. Tell us why this is important to think about in terms of the whole body aspects of MI and not just its effects on the heart.
Thanks, Mary. There are actually quite a few reasons for considering a comprehensive multi-organ approach in studying heart failure. In patients, myocardial infarction or heart attack usually occurs because of some sort of endothelial dysfunction or metabolic disease like atherosclerosis that leads to blockage of the coronary arteries, ischemic injury in the heart, and heart attack. And therefore, when the heart is affected, usually other organs in the body may as well be affected. And because of this, in patients, heart failure can occur with multiple other disorders like hypertension, metabolic disorder that comes with obesity and insulin resistance sometimes. And renal failure has been one of the important issues in heart failure patients. And actually, an increasing number of papers have demonstrated a critical relationship between the heart and the kidneys and how heart disease patients could also suffer from kidney injuries or even kidney failure. And when it comes to the spleen, of course, the spleen is the center of any disease or any condition which involves an inflammatory response. So when you consider all these factors, it actually makes perfect sense that in a heart failure condition or in an experimental model of heart failure, these different organs are also studied simultaneously and in a way to have an integrative system biology approach.
Exactly. And today's concepts of personalized medicine and thinking of individual responses, I like this idea of not only thinking about individual organs, but also thinking about the whole body of the individual, whether it be a mouse or a human. And so this is a very timely article. Ganesh, my impression when I read your manuscript is that the changes that your team noted were in parallel across the three organs rather than being sequential. Would you say this is correct? And if so, what are the implications of this? I'm wondering if this indicates that the kidney and spleen are independently responding to changes in myocardial perfusion. And do you think serial changes are also occurring?
You are right, Mary. The changes are highly interlinked as a complex network, and those changes are parallel. There is a feedback activation of a splenic leukocyte in response to heart attack for cardiac damage clearance. And that cardiac damage clearance stimulates feed-forward renal damage in acute and chronic pathology. Particularly, the spleen acts as a reservoir or leukocyte arsenal to regulate myocardial healing in acute state. And this gives feed-forward trigger to the kidney. So thus, the kidney and spleen changes are parallel to the heart attack or the myocardium trigger, in which the spleen-derived leukocyte rush in the circulation, including the kidney. At the same time, the MI trigger induces the acute burst of leukocytes from the spleen, and that feed forward triggers the acute kidney damage to the glomerulus that alters many acute kidney markers, such as the lipocalin 2, which is increased in acute heart failure pathology. But if we see the long-term time points, such as day 56, in that case, there is increase in the serum creatinine. So thus, there is a continuous complex network between these three organs. In brief, the spleen serves as a feedback activator of leukocytes in cardiac healing in acute pathology, whereas the kidney serves as a feed-forward receiver of the leukocyte burst related kidney damage in heart failure. That's why I feel like this all three organs are connecting in a parallel way.
Ganesh, this is a very cool article, and the amount of publicity that this article has garnered is very impressive. Your article has been picked up by over 8 news outlets. It's been blogged. It's been tweeted. No wonder it's highly downloaded. Zam, can you tell us why you think there's excitement in the scientific and lay communities for this work?
You're absolutely correct, Mary, and rightfully so. This paper has received a lot of attention, and I think it's mainly because it has taken such a different approach in analyzing the post-MI events in a model of heart failure compared to most studies that focus on the heart itself. In this study, they've taken into account that the post-MI inflammatory response, in fact, originates in the spleen, and therefore it's important to see how this organ, the spleen, is altered after a long term after MI. In addition to the integrative approach of the study that we discussed just earlier, there is also the long-term effects that are studied here following myocardial infarction and how it affects the other organs like the spleen and the kidney in the body. Those of us who study models of heart disease in mice, we are quite aware that the time course of events are much faster in the mouse than they are in humans. So you could say that the 56-day post-MI in this study would reflect a 10-year course of post-heart attack disease progression in humans. And this is really the key focus of this time-dependent study. So perhaps this rather rare approach in studying heart disease, which is a multi-organ, integrative, and long-term approach in studying post-MI events in heart disease, is the reason for all the excitement in the scientific community.
I agree, and I can see that this article is likely to continue to get social media attention. Let's talk about permanent occlusion versus reperfusion models. A lot of reviewers think that only reperfusion models in mice are relevant for a number of naive reasons. Ganesh, can you tell us why you used a permanent occlusion model in this study?
Mary, as you well know, the permanent coronary occlusion is a relevant animal model of acute ST segment elevation after MI, and this model reflects patients who have a contraindications or logistic issues and do not receive timely or successful reperfusion. So this turns out to be around 25% of MI patients in the UMS. Therefore, the permanent coronary occlusion yields acute segment elevation infarction with robust myocardial inflammation and needed to detect differences between the groups. For these reasons, we need the permanent occlusion model. There is another interesting point that I want to cite, that the reperfusion do not develop the chronic heart failure pathology that we notice in this model, whether no matter whether it is reperfusion or no perfusion. There are multiple signs of heart failure in patients. In brief, we are over-focusing on the doctor's reperfusion procedure in the development of mice model, and instead we need to focus on replication of the patient heart failure pathology, which is possible only using the permanent coronary ligation, because reperfused mice don't develop advanced heart failure unless you do it for a longer time. Therefore, we use an analogy in the discussion, pinching for the reperfusion and punching for the permanent coronary ligation, because it develops larger system-wide cardiac damage as we see in chronic heart failure patients.
Ganesh, I have to say, I totally agree with everything you just said. And AJP Heart has a guideline that's now in press on using ischemia and infarction in animal models. And your exact points are mirrored in that article. And so I think that it's well appreciated by the experts in the field that there's differences in permanent occlusion and reperfusion models, and both have strengths and limitations. And the main thing is just knowing what question you want answered in terms of matching it up to what model is the best model for that. Sam, did you want to add anything to this discussion about reperfusion versus permanent occlusion?
I also want to just briefly add that the molecular mechanism underlying the two events are completely different, and both are obviously relevant to patients since some patients don't make it to the hospital in time for reperfusion and they're not able to receive the reopening of the coronary arteries.
Yeah, I like how Ganesh said that instead of focusing on the doctor's procedure, we should be focusing on the patient's pathology. Okay, Ganesh, I want to talk about figures 3 and 4 in your manuscript. Those are very nice strain analysis. For the readers that are new to using echocardiography to assess strain, can you tell us what this analysis is showing and why it's important?
As you mentioned, that the guidelines will be very helpful. At the same time, we know that the strain analysis is quite known in the clinical practice. And because the strain is a unique parameter that determines the deformation in which the myocardium is divided into 48 dots, and that measure the strength of each regional area, particularly this, the green vector lines, which are shown in the figure 3 and 4, that indicates the strength of that each specific area, and that also measures the heart function in 3 dimensions. The first is upside down, the second side to side, and the third one is like a torque, means that the heart is contracting and relaxing in a circular motion. See, all these 3 things can be measured by using the new tools, that's the strain analysis. All of these measurements are detailed as a functional and a structural compendium in acute and chronic heart failure pathology. This novel strain technology is providing regional assessment of the myocardium that allows us to find the exact function and dysfunction in cardiac pathology and cardiac repair experiments.
Again, this is a good example of matching what goes on in the clinical practice to the basic science research experimental design. With today's ongoing discussions about rigor and reproducibility, this article will go a long way to setting up a gold standard for evaluating these 3 organs after MI. Ganesh Alade, thank you for writing a fabulous article. Zam Kasiri, thanks for discussing this article with us. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.